This week on Lunchbox Envy, I am black on the outside, clad in a wrinkled cover, yet within I bear a burning marrow.
I season delicacies, the banquets of kings, and the luxuries of the table, both the sauces and the tenderized meats of the kitchen.
But you will find in me no quality of any worth, unless your bowels have been rattled by my gleaming marrow.
I am, of course, Pepper!
Of course.
Of course. Hello and welcome to Lunchbox Envy. I'm Manu and I'm here with my fellow QI elf, Jack. Hi, Jack.
Hello, Manu. And also hello to chef and food writer Rosie McKean.
Hello.
So that unorthodox introduction was in fact a 7th century riddle from an English bishop, the answer to which was obviously pepper.
Yeah, my bowels feel very rattled by your gleaming marrow.
Oh, God. First things first, when we are talking about pepper, there are a few things we could be talking about. So today,
yes, clear this up.
Yeah, we are talking about black pepper, table pepper, peppercorns.
As opposed to chili peppers?
Exactly.
Or Sichuan peppers?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
I learned doing the research for this that the reason why we're not talking about Sichuan pepper is because it ain't a pepper. It's a citrus.
Exactly.
Which is crazy when you think about it.
There are lots of different kinds of peppers, but there are many that aren't true peppers. And we're going to talk about true Piper peppers today. So they grow on a vine. The peppercorns we think about are the berries on the vine.
Oh, they're little berries.
The historians think that they first originated in Kerala, India. Now Vietnam is the country that grows the most, but it's used all over the world. It's a really, really popular spice. And there are quite a few different colours. I don't know if you've noticed.
Yes.
Not just black. I know. So there's also green, white and red. All the same plant,
okay.
All the same berry, they're just prepared in different ways. So the black pepper that we see on the table is picked when it's unripe, when it's green actually. It's cooked and then it's dried in the sun. Green pepper is the same as black pepper, it's just uncooked. Red peppercorns are fully ripe and white peppercorns have been cooked and dried and then skinned.
Okay, so it's just like the pip inside of a pepper.
Crazy the difference that makes in the flavour,
yeah.
Right?
I know.
Like they taste so different to me.
But also, when you cook and you dry the black peppercorn, the Maillard reaction, that's what's giving it that like roasty, toasty, aromatic flavour.
Of course, of course. Know.
Good friend, the Maillard reaction.
Yeah, does someone want to explain the Maillard reaction?
I will take a punt. The Maillard reaction is basically when you apply heat to something, the proteins change shape, they create sugars, and these sugars caramelize, and that is what creates a very delicious, roasty, toasty flavour. A very good example is when you pan fry a steak and you get a crust on the outside. That flavour is pure Maillard, basically.
So we mentioned false peppers as well. So we've got the pink pepper, which is actually a completely different plant. It's more closely related to the cashew.
Yes, and I read that you can get an allergic reaction if you're allergic to tree nuts.
Because really?
You might think it's just pepper, which you're fine with, but actually pink pepper's much closer related to the cashew. It causes anaphylactic.
Oh my God.
Conditions.
Do people know this? Like, they should know this.
Oh, they should, yeah.
Now they will.
Okay.
Send this podcast to all of your friends.
The ones with allergies.
Yeah.
There's also the Sichuan pepper, which is, as you said, Rosie, a citrus, not a pepper at all. And then we have peppers, as in red peppers, which are not the Piper pepper. And it's actually such an interesting story, the confusion around the chili pepper and the Piper pepper, black pepper. Okay, so black pepper was called black gold back in the day. We're thinking about booming spice trade in kind of medieval Europe and Asia. You have like crazy trade routes around the Silk Road, which runs, Jack, do you know?
Before around 1400, it was the road connection between Europe and Asia. So that's how we got pepper from India in places like France, Sweden and the UK.
And then we have the rather famous Christopher Columbus, who decides to go on a big old trip for the King and Queen of Spain in search of black pepper, because this was hot stuff. Everyone wanted it. It was really expensive. It was really tasty. So he's like, hey, guys, I'm going to find you some. Don't worry. Leave it to me.
And he was trying to find a different route to India, wasn't he? Because he wanted to cut out all the middlemen. Because if you go through the Silk Roads, you get charged taxes on, on all sorts of imports into like Mesopotamia and then the Ottoman Empire and all this. So he wanted to go around and cut out the middleman.
And then, rather famously, does not end up in India.
No, he does not.
He doesn't. Ends up somewhere quite far away from India. So when he lands in the Caribbean, he's like, all right, I'm in India. Let's find this pepper. He's still looking for pepper. And he's like, guys, where is it?
The locals don't understand him. And he's like, mamma mia, where is my pepper?
They're like, okay, we don't have that, but we do have this thing, which is kind of spicy. It's got a kick to it. Mm. And he's like, oh my God, we'll just call this thing a pepper as well. So that's the chili pepper. So that is the reason why chili peppers and black pepper share that name. It's just that big mix up right at the beginning.
Ah.
Interesting. Because I think, if you were to taste black pepper and chili pepper side by side, you do notice a difference, right? Like there is a very different flavor profile. There's a different way that the heat hits your palate, heats the back of your throat. There's so many very obvious differences.
The thing that makes chili pepper spicy is capsaicin. And the thing that makes black pepper pungent and spicy is piperine. The piperine activates the same receptors as the capsaicin does for heat. So it's basically tricking your mouth into going, oh my God, I'm on fire. But then, interestingly, Sichuan pepper, the false pepper, works differently.
Okay.
How
does it work?
So that activates receptors that are more to do with movement. So it kind of tricks your mouth into thinking it's like micro-vibrating.
That's why it feels kind of quivery.
Yeah, that's why you get that little buzz, that numbing flavor, which is really cool.
That's crazy.
I know. So shall we get started?
Yes.
Let's open our first lunchbox, and that is you, Rosie.
Guys, I've done something very nice for you all. I've made cacio e pepe.
Oh my God.
Which you both know what that is, but just in case anyone at home does not know, cacio e pepe is a classic Roman pasta dish that translates to cheese and pepper in Italian. Cacio is a type of sheep's cheese, pecorino. Pepe is obviously pepper. And you would make it normally with tonnarelli, spaghetti, bucatini, or in my case, I've made it with rigatoni. And it is one of the four classic Roman pasta dishes alongside everyone's favorite carbonara, amatriciana, and gricia. And the idea is that you make a very silky emulsified sauce with the pasta water, the toasted peppercorns, and this sheep's cheese. Passing it round now, one for you.
I am so excited.
So I made this because it is just a prolific pepper dish that we know and love, and it's become extremely popular in the last 10 to 12 years. I actually found a really interesting reason why that might be. So I don't know if you remember, but there was two earthquakes in Italy in 2012.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
In Emilia-Romagna, which is sort of central Italy. They were pretty serious. They resulted in 27 deaths and a significant amount of property damage. Particularly, this affected a lot of cheese producers. Parmesan and Grana Padano are both produced in this area.
Oh, wow.
Now, I know what you're thinking. Neither of those cheeses are supposed to be in cacio e pepe. You're right, they're not. So there's a famous chef in Emilia-Romagna called Massimo Bottura. Have you heard of him?
Mm-hmm.
He runs a 3 Michelin star restaurant called Osteria Francescana.
Wow.
He was like, shit, we need to start fundraising for these poor cheese producers. We can't let anyone lose their jobs. We can't let anyone lose their livelihoods. We've got to do something. So he creates an event which is a cook-off. And the recipe he decides to do is cacio e pepe risotto. Now, that's not what you're eating. Now you're eating a pasta dish. But this cashew pepper risotto was really, really popular. It raised loads of money. And suddenly this dish that everyone had sort of like been a bit neither here nor there on.
Or hadn't heard of it.
Or they hadn't heard of it. We're like, ooh, cacio e pepe, that's cool. And that year it was voted the trendiest pasta in Rome.
Yeah.
And it's never looked back, basically. It's become this incredibly popular pasta dish. Lots of people in the UK are really obsessed with this pasta dish, particularly because a restaurant opened in 2016 called Padella.
Oh, yeah.
A very good restaurant. Like, let's give Padella its flowers. It's a great pasta restaurant, serves cheap, well-made pasta. They put on their menu a peachy cacio e pepe. Peachy is a type of wheat pasta, very thick from Tuscany. And it was just instantly viral. Like, it was viral pre-virality because there wasn't really a really huge Instagram presence back then. But suddenly this pasta was coming so, so, so big. It's just like perfectly emulsified, beautiful, silky, peppery sauce. And I think it's really appealing to British people because it's so simple and we love a simple...
We are so lazy.
We're so... it's all, not even that. Like, it's seeing something really simply done and made well that's deeply satisfying. I've actually watched them make it. I did a demo with the chefs from Padella who helped develop that recipe. They use a different load of ingredients that you'd think. They use a bit of lemon juice. They use butter. And they use Parmesan as well as Pecorino because Parmesan has a higher fat content than Pecorino, which means it's easier to emulsify. So mine has got, obviously, Pecorino, black pepper, and rigatoni. And I toasted my black peppercorns in the pan, added a little bit of pasta water to that. I added pasta water to my Pecorino, stirred it around, made it a little creamy. And then I mixed it all together, tossed it really nicely. And it's just, you know, a very delicious, salty and spicy pasta.
Yeah, there's a real kick to it, actually.
The first time I had this dish was at Padella.
Oh, yeah?
Really? It's one of my best friends, Joey. That was her first chef job.
Aww.
So she was like, you got to come down, try it. The food's really good. And she served me cacio e pepe. And it was one of the most beautiful dishes.
It is great. Honestly, like, you know, I think that restaurant has got very, very popular and it means something else now. But it's still a very good offering. So how did this become a Roman classic? Well, one new thing we are very clear on, the ancient Romans loved spices. There was lots of spicing in all of their cooking. And then, of course, even through the Middle Ages, across Europe, spices were extremely prevalent. And they were sort of like a marker of you being, you know, noble. You had, if you had spices and you were using them in your cooking, you were...
Very expensive, right?
Rich. Then two things happened. One, in the Renaissance, the Dutch and the Portuguese improved these spice routes. They did what Christopher Columbus did not do. They went round the back and found the route to Asia and alleviated the stranglehold that the Italians had at that point on the spice trades. That made spices more accessible, firstly. So suddenly something that was really hard to get hold of was a bit easier, got a little bit more mainstream. Later in the 1600s, in the Enlightenment, French gastronomy becomes incredibly popular, becomes the norm. Spiced foods goes out of fashion.
Oh, is that, do you think that's why the word deviled arrived, which means heavily spiced?
Yeah, it became the culinary pinnacle of gastronomic expression. And at the heart of it was meat, dairy, good vegetables, salt. It didn't rely on spices. And that also is because, you know, by that point, we were getting much better at cultivating. We didn't need spices to hide the flavor of spoiling food, for example. That was one of the things they were used for, particularly in the Roman times. Heavily perfume your food so you couldn't tell if it was off or not. People just learned to cook better. They didn't need the crutch that spices provided in the Middle Ages.
That's fascinating.
And that is why spices, particularly black pepper in this case, stopped being black gold. They went really out of fashion. At this point, peasants started using spices because they were like, great, we can use these now. They were using them a lot more in the same way that they were used previously, a little bit to sort of hide the spoiling of food, or indeed, you know, in Cucina Povera in Italy to make things taste better that were ultimately very, very, very simple. So in this case, peasants that were shepherds living in the hills in Lazio above Rome and in the Apennines were using the cheese that they got from their goats and black pepper to make delicious pastas.
Oh, sounds great.
And that is where cacio e pepe kind of comes from.
Thank you, Lazio shepherds.
But it also leads me neatly on to something that I'm really keen to talk about, which is that In Italy, particularly, black pepper is used as a spice. It is not used as a seasoning. Whereas in our country, in the UK, we use pepper very, very habitually in all of our food. Salt and pepper is written at the end of most of my recipes. Season your food with salt and pepper.
Yeah, I've always found that very odd because salt is one of the few things that we eat that doesn't come from a plant or an animal, ultimately, other than lab-grown emulsifiers and stuff. It's like a pure chemical and also has very interesting properties, like it enhances flavor and it draws moisture out. And yet pepper is one of many spices. And it's weird that we don't like have salt and vanilla or salt and cumin or something like what they're equivalent.
Yeah, that is that has never really crossed my mind, but that is so interesting. You're right. It's a mineral, right? They do use pepper as a seasoning in Italy a little bit too. You've all seen an absolutely enormous pepper grinder floating towards you in a restaurant. I mean, I sort of think that is a British thing that they've kind of like laughing at us for. But anyway.
The guys that come over with the massive pepper grinder, they're called pepieres.
Are they?
Yeah. It's like a sommelier, but for pepper.
What a great job.
That's great. I'm going to use that.
Anyway.
Garçon, bring the pepierie.
Also, garçon is French. You do know
well,
that.
I'm a polyglot.
Okay.
I was going to say, one of actually big friend of the podcast, he's helped us out with research, a guy called Ken Albala.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. He thinks that the reason why salt and pepper go together on the table is to do with that shift away from heavily spicing food, as you said, when the French were like, you know what, we don't need this anymore. And spices were relegated to desserts.
Oh.
But pepper does not work well in a lot of desserts.
Yeah.
So that stuck to the table with salt and all of the other spices went that way.
That's so interesting. So to summarize, it's one of those things that actually can't really be pinholed because the way it's been used over the, you know, centuries and centuries that we've been cooking, it has become both an important seasoning and a spice. And you shouldn't worry too much about how you use it, as long as you're not like sniffing it.
Yeah, it crosses boundaries.
Yeah, that's the first thing that popped into my head is like, don't snort it. It is time for our second lunchbox, and that is Jack's. What have you got for us today, Jack?
I brought something very exciting. I brought a pepper-infused martini.
Oh my God,
that's my favourite cocktail.
It's actually kind of golden-coloured, and that's because of all the piper iron in it.
Wow.
That is
beautiful. I can't believe how dark that is, actually. It looks like it's a Sazerac or something.
So I infused the gin with a few peppercorns and left that overnight and, yeah, made a martini out of it.
I can't wait. Can we drink it?
It might have a bit of a kick.
Okay. I'll give it a sniff first. Ooh, delicious. Mm. You know, I was thinking when you said gin, that actually pepper and juniper, which is a prevalent spice in gin, are a really good match.
Yeah.
So maybe this is going to be very good and we're all going to make millions from it. Oh, it's really good.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, I love it. Oh,
I've actually stirred it rather than shaken it because QI is borrowing my cocktail shaker.
Well, it's paid off because that is delicious.
Mm.
It's quite Christmassy.
Yeah, it is. There is a sort of delicate spicing, but isn't too... It's not peppery in the sense that it doesn't hit the back of your throat, but it has a really nice aroma and kind of roasty depth.
Yeah, I'm getting, you know, when you stick a load of cloves in a clementine.
Oh.
I don't know why I'm thinking of that. It's so beautiful.
I think the fact that it's gold also affects the way you perceive the taste.
Yeah. Interesting that you served it with a twist of lemon rather than dirty with olives, which is my preferred way to have
a martini.
I do like briny things. But also, if you think about it, we could have made, for a dirty martini, use the olive brine, salty, and then the pepper from the gin, peppery, salt and pepper martini.
Oh, next time.
Anyway, so this is kind of a launch pad into the idea of using pepper for different things. So obviously, we're used to grinding it on our food, and this is an example of how you can make drinks from it. But it's been used for multiple things over history, including to mummify ancient Egyptians. In fact, Ramesses II was discovered with a peppercorn up each nostril.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Wow.
I don't know what that's a reference to.
Still don't snort it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But chiefly, the most interesting thing, I think, is that it was used as a currency, not least because it's quantifiable. Like, they're all the same size. They're very easy to count. And they last a long time. So it's kind of like having coins in your pocket is having a few peppercorns. Mm. In fact, when the Visigoths besieged Rome in 408 Common Era, they demanded 3,000 pounds of black pepper as a ransom.
That's crazy.
So you can have your city back when we get our pepper.
What?
Mm. Where did they use pepper as physical currency?
Throughout the Middle Ages in Europe and the Middle East. And in fact, in 1328, London's Guild of Pepperers, we had a guild for them, they were registered as grossarii, i.e. those who sell in bulk or in gross, you know. And this word later became grocers. So that's where we get groceries from, because grocers originally sold pepper.
Yeah. Nice. So whilst we're talking about how expensive and amazingly valuable pepper used to be, there's a food historian and writer called Anna Sulan Marsing, who is incredible. She actually grew up on a pepper farm. And she's written loads and loads about pepper. And she argues that, like, particularly the thirst or the hunger for pepper is what drove colonial expansion.
Oh, of course. So Christopher Columbus and trying to cut out the middlemen with the Silk Road.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
And yet now we're just shoving it in our tomato sandwiches. Like, when I was doing my research, I stumbled upon a Reddit thread, as I'm wont to do. And on that Reddit thread, people were talking about all the different words or phrases in their various different languages and dialects that mean pepper as gold or currency.
Oh, right.
Like, you know, that's a pepper price, meaning that's a high price.
Yeah, yeah.
In German, there is Pfefferteuer, which means pepper expensive. That's pepper expensive.
Das ist mir Pfefferteuer.
Yeah, it sounds like something out of Tots TV. Or
that is a very niche reference, except for our generation.
Oh, I love it.
In Malay, I'm not going to do a very good example of this. In Malay / Indonesian, mahal seperti lada means expensive like pepper.
Okay. Yeah. So it's worldwide, practically. Yeah.
Yeah. Dutch, French, Portuguese.
And in English too, peppercorn rent. It's actually come to mean something symbolically cheap and negligible. But back in the day, you used to actually pay your rent in peppercorns. And to this day, the University of Bath, there's a cricket club in Sevenoaks, and actually the Masonic Lodge in Bermuda, they all provide one peppercorn to their landlords every single year. And the one in Bermuda actually present it on a satin cushion every year. Actually, they do it on April the 23rd, which is your birthday.
That is my birthday.
When's my birthday, Jack?
February 17th?
19th.
Oh. Oh,
wait, can I do a wild line? February 19th?
It's time for our final lunchbox, and that is mine. Okay, let's open this.
Ooh.
I have a packet of picked black peppercorns.
Again, three times fast.
So these are fermented peppercorns. So they've been picked when they're unripe and fresh, and then fermented instead of dried and cooked.
Ooh. Oh my God.
These are potentially one of my favorite ways to eat pepper.
Oh, yeah.
You can pop them raw.
Ooh.
Whoa.
You want to try?
Yeah, always. Okay. I always like raw dog in it. Oh, God.
What do you think? Mm. Oh, wow. That's like Parmesan cheese.
It's like distilled pepper flavor without the heat, weirdly. Like, it's not too spicy.
Yeah, you could chow these.
Anymore?
You get like a really clean, like, palate flavor profile of pepper.
They are very munchable, aren't they?
Well, I'm getting a little bit of heat now.
Yeah.
Mm. Oh, yeah. I might have overdone it.
Well, it's so good.
What is extra special about them is that they are from Kampot. They are Kampot peppers.
Kampot being Cambodia.
Exactly. Ah. The first time I had these, I was in France. I was au pairing for a foodie family whom I love dearly. And they were like, this is the best kind of black pepper. Wow. And I didn't really understand it at the time. But when we were researching for this, I found that it was at one point the most expensive type of pepper you could get because the climate in Kampot is like perfect for growing really, really delicious pepper because of a specific altitude and this like rich soil. In Cambodia, there's a really big history of growing pepper because the land is great for it. Kampot pepper was particularly popular during the French protectorate. The French went crazy for Kampot pepper. It was traded all over Europe. But then in the 1970s, during the genocide under Pol Pot, he nearly wiped out all of these incredible pepper vines because he got loads of people to fight for the Khmer Rouge and also got people to grow rice instead. So the plant was nearly lost. And then towards the end of the 20th century, a group of French farmers and also like local Cambodian farmers made a massive push to bring the Kampot pepper back. And it did so well in 2010, Kampot pepper earned a protected geographical indication. So PGI.
Amazing.
Exactly, which is like champagne. So champagne can only be from that region, champagne. And
a specific way of making it, right?
Yes, particularly tied to what the land gives that food. Anyway, so I was looking more into this pepper. I found a company that's actually based in Hackney called Kadod Kampot. Sorry, it's now the spice is getting.
I know, right? It is actually quite spicy.
Deliciously
spicy.
Anyway, so I got in touch with them and it's run by a British man called Michael Winters. And he was so excited to help the podcast out that he sent a load of samples.
Oh, sweet.
We actually did like this incredible backstreet trade where he just gave me an envelope full of peppercorns and I was there in the middle of the road going like, what is happening?
Yeah, there's a cash.
So these particular peppercorns that we've just eaten, they won the 2022 Great Taste Championship.
No way.
So they were...
So they didn't just get a sticker. They
won it. So they were the tastiest, great taste thing of that year.
Wow.
Since then, I've had a few of these peppers and they've like gone all around. All of my chefy friends love them. I've actually taken them to festivals and they do...
In a little baggy.
No, I kid you not. We'll be like standing in a queue for something and people are like, oh my God, what is that? And I'll be like, would you like to try it? And you have a little pepper experience.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah. So yeah, they're one of my favorite things to eat now. And that's why I brought it today.
I love it.
Little Kampot pepper.
Do you have it in salads? How do you eat it? Do you eat it whole like that or do you grind it at all?
The fresh ones I don't ground. We kind of have them as like snacking peppers at the start of a meal and stuff because it is such a nice, fresh, zingy flavor.
And quite empowering, I imagine. Because they're so flavorful.
Yeah.
But also they're not that dry, so they might not grind very well.
Like you're supposed to keep them in the fridge as well.
Right.
So yeah, that's the Kampot pepper. So thank you, Michael.
Thank you, Michael.
That's it for this week's edition of Lunchbox Envy. You can follow us on our socials for foodie facts and podcast updates. We're on X, Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok at Lunchbox Envy Pod.
You can also get in touch with us and send us your facts, recipes, or questions by emailing us lunchbox@qi.com.
That's right. And don't forget, if you're enjoying the podcast, you're completely free to rate it wherever you get your podcast from. Spotify, Apple Podcasts, they both have excellent 5-star potential rating systems.
And we're going to leave you with this French proverb. He who has plenty of pepper will pepper his cabbage. Which means people who have an abundance of something tend to use it freely or sometimes excessively. Mm. So watch out. Protect your peppercorns. We'll see you next week. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Lunchbox Envy was hosted by Jack Chambers, Rosie McKean, and me, Manu Oreo. It was mixed by Liang Lee and produced by Alex Bell. This has been a quite interesting podcast.